When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 482. We're going to be taking At Midnight on the road. Let's see if anyone's going to see our show live, because it actually works really well live. We did it for, you know, all summer leading up to when we actually went on the air. We did it at our Nerd Melt space, and it's a really, really fun live show. So we're going to do it at the South Beach Comedy Festival April 4th. Tickets are on sale for that. I believe the website is southbeachcomedyfestival.com. Easy enough. And then also, I'm going to be doing stand-up in New York. I don't know if tickets are on sale yet, but I think it's like May 1st, 2nd, 3rd. I'm going back to Caroline's, which I love. So if tickets are not on sale by the time this podcast goes up, then they will be soon. So so I'm working out the new hour, shooting a new special in several months. So come on out. Also, I'd like to thank Stamps.com for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Don't go to the post office. Why would you do that? Why do you like punching yourself in the soul? Use Stamps.com. That's all you need to do. Just get a Stamps.com account. You can print out the exact postage you need whenever you want, at any hour. It doesn't close. A little gate doesn't come on down your computer like when 501 hits. You can do it whenever you want, and then your kindly mail carrier will come pick it up from your hands and take it to its destination. So Stamps.com. Use it. Use the offer code Nerdist. You're going to get a $110 bonus offer, including a $55 of free postage and a digital scale. Don't wait before you do anything else. Go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone on the top of the homepage and type in Nerdist. That is Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist. This episode is Kit Harington, who is so fucking cool. Katie, how cool is Kit Harington? Seriously, how cool is Kit
Harington? He was really cool.
He was...
His hair was really cool.
It was so much cooler than all of our hairs. I'm sorry, you have cool hair, Katie.
But we have similar hair. I was
you and Kit have
hair.
Similar hair.
Yeah, I was looking at his hair.
But his is, it's just...
Better.
You have cool hair, but his is just dreamy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't know how else to say it. He's just, you know. Pompeii is a movie that he's in, which hits theaters today, February 21st. And, of course, he is Jon Snow on Game of Thrones back April 6th. He did a fun little thing for us on At Midnight last night. And we had a really nice time. So, you know, he's just one of those guys where you're like, fuck, man, I want to hang out with that guy. I just want some of the cool stuff to rub off. And he's not even trying to be cool. He's just, that's what it is, Katie. You cannot.
Oh, he's just cool.
He just is. He just is.
Yeah.
So please enjoy soaking up some palatable and non-threatening cool in your ear holes today for the Nerdist Podcast number 482 with our new pal, Kit Harington. Let's just say we're friends with him now,
I
Katie.
Would love to be friends with him.
Katie, yep. you're hurting my arm. Let me go.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
The exposed brick.
Yes, thank you. I say that like I had anything to do with it. There were walls there before, but I was like, take the brick out just in part of the room and then build this out weirdly and put a closet there that we'll never use. You know, they just sort of stuck us in this room, and I actually really like it.
Yeah.
We had to put a carpet down because it was a little echoey, but man, it's not bad. It feels industrial. How do you feel about this desk? Does it feel like not a good podcast desk as a guest?
I feel you could get a big oak one to match your exposed brick.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, Katie. And, oak desk.
That's never going to happen.
And a leather armchair, maybe.
Leather, and then a smoking jacket.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just slippers, no pants, and a pipe. I'll just come in. Welcome to the podcast.
Next time I come back, that's what I want to see. That's what I want to see.
It'll happen, all right? I promise it'll happen. I feel like it'd be so great if so much of the world was just like Playboy After Dark in the late 60s, where everyone was just like, everything was a cocktail party, you know?
It can be, Chris. That's
no,
the thing.
No, it can't. It can't for me anymore. We met at the Seven Sun panel? It was at Comic-Con.
Yeah, and you were wearing a gun holster.
Yes, I was dressed as one of my favorite video game characters from BioShock.
Right, yeah.
Do you play games at all?
As you know, I'm not a huge gamer.
No.
I'm big into FIFA, football.
Sure, yeah.
Do you play that?
No.
That is so addictive. I love that.
If I understood what we call soccer,
yeah.
If I understood a little bit better, I've really tried. I have a friend who has a really huge like football podcast,
uh-huh.
And I've really tried to get him to teach me the and do you know Dominic Monaghan at all?
Yeah, I met him.
Huge soccer fanatic.
Yeah, he's now let me get this right. He's a Manchester United fan.
Is he really?
Yeah, he is.
Okay, is that good or bad?
I've got that wrong. Then
is that good or bad from your point of view?
That's a great thing.
Oh, that is good,
but not so good at the moment because we're doing terribly. So, but him being a Manchester United fan is wonderful.
So, was this just part of the when you grew up? Like, it's just part of your culture of growing up, and you never questioned it. You were like, "Well, this is awesome," or do you really? Is there something really special about it that you see when you watch it?
I'm what they call a true red. In that I've never been to Manchester.
Just like the team.
Yeah, no, I grew up next to we're very close with this Irish family, and in Ireland there's a big culture of supporting Manchester United or Liverpool.
Yeah.
And they were all big Man United fans, and I kind of by osmosis followed it because my parents were never big sports people, so me and my brother got it through the family that we lived next to. Usually it comes down generations from your parents.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's like that in America too.
Yeah.
Where it's, you know, like they have the flags on the cars and all of the, we like Minnesota, everything's purple, you know. College football here. Is there any equivalent to college sports fanaticism?
We've never got that in the UK about the American thing. And I think what it is for you guys, it's more interesting to watch, isn't it? Isn't sometimes it's really, really exciting? It's more exciting than the actual sport.
I guess
that's what someone told me.
As nearly as I've been able to figure, the thing that is more exciting about it, and maybe you told me this, Katie, it's just that no one's getting paid.
Yeah, no one gets paid.
No one gets paid, and they really have to try harder because there's so much at stake.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see who's good and
who's going to
make it professionally.
Yeah,
that you get to follow their careers. Where did you grow up exactly?
London.
You grew up in London.
I grew up in London for 11 years, and then a place called Worcestershire.
Mm-hmm.
For the next until I was 18, and then came back to London. So I consider myself a London boy.
Yeah.
Strictly, I should be an Arsenal fan because I live right near their stadium. But I'm going to get lynched for this.
You are not in America. Most Americans
get
are
lynched for this.
I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know all that British shit. What's he talking about over there? That's not the Niners.
Yeah, it's but. It can split people up in say Liverpool.
Oh yeah,
I've got friends' family who they now don't. Well, I say friend, I wouldn't associate with these people, but but they've got a friend's family who like the son supports Everton and they're all Liverpool fans and it's literally broken the family up.
Oh, no,
yeah.
Well I know I remember being in one of the first times I ever spent any length of time in London, just kind of going into these dive bars and seeing like no colors, like you weren't allowed to wear your team colors.
Yeah, where we filmed Game of Thrones in Belfast, it's very serious. You're not allowed to wear a football team shirt, especially Manchester United.
I mean, the hooligans will bite your fucking fingers off.
Yeah,
like in bar fights.
Yeah, you really don't want to.
And you're just you're like, hey, no, I'm an actor. I just want to enjoy a game. Why does it have
to? I definitely don't say you're an actor. Then you definitely get limp.
Oh no. But they must recognize you now, right?
Yeah, they do. And Belfast is like a home to us now. It's you know, the first year we did it, maybe even the second year, they could not give a shit. They did not care. They didn't really understand what it was. And then suddenly it blew up with the third season. And now it feels like, but it's a lovely city, and they kind of welcome us in, and we're very, very, we're very proud to be there. And they honestly are. They don't bother you too much. They just holler at you in the street. It's great.
Do you have any civilization nearby when you're shooting, or do you like just like go out into? I mean, yeah. I feel like you spent a lot of the last couple seasons just like roaming through really inhospitable terrain. was there a nice hotel for you at the end of that day?
Yeah, I mean, Iceland is pretty remote. That's where we do all the kind of out exterior snowy scenes. They will do things that really you think is stupid on their part because you could lose an actor. I remember I got told to walk out on a frozen lake once, and they said keep going. Keep going. I was. Is this safe? No. We're finding out.
Well, let's find out together.
You're finding out
with your body. Let's find out together.
We're finding out.
I'll tell you what.
You
if you fall in, then no. How about that? If you fall in, then the answer is no.
Yeah. No. Very remote. They're very remote places. Very beautiful places that we film, including Northern Ireland and Iceland. I haven't yet to go to Croatia where they film the sunny kind of warm bits. I'm going to go on a set visit next year if we go back there,
and then just see what it's like. Oh, this is fucking nice,
because they all come back glowing from it and then saying how, you know, miserable it is where I film, so I'm going to go out and see it.
It's funny how, you know, when you're young and it's like acting is this thing where you're emoting and you really show someone what a character is, and then a lot of your job is like, all right, your hands are tied together, and you're walking from that crag to those rocks over there, and just go.
Backwards. Backwards.
Just go. And then you're going to do it 10 times. Yeah. You're like, I think this is acting.
I think backwards in a snow blizzard next to a 500-foot drop, that was the, on ice, that was
oh,
the...
Jesus.
Yeah. It's. I mean, when I say it can be dangerous, it can be really dangerous. It's the... But to get some of the stuff we need to do, we need to go to these incredible places where... I don't know how they film in some places. We'll end up going into a huge snowdrift, and we're there for the day because you can't get back to a warm-up vehicle, so you have to be out in minus 30 for the entire day. It can get really extreme, but the beauty of the place always takes you through.
Well, I'm such a huge pussy about the environment. Like, I just like warm things.
Yeah.
I've lived all over the country, and I get it cold. I get it. I don't need it in my life, And when I'm watching, particularly when I'm watching your scenes, I really can't get my head out of, like, that looks fucking miserable. Like, you know, like, there's only so much encampment they could build around that where you guys are shooting to make sure that everyone's...
So I get asked, why is Jon Snow so miserable? And I'm like... have you seen where he is? Wouldn't you be? No, but yeah, it can get tough. It can get very, very cold.
Yeah. Do you feel that like the response when you first got the job, you know, when you're like, oh, this, you know, book series, great, and then, you know, like Game of Thrones just became like Game of Thrones. Like, now it's this cultural phenomenon.
Yeah, it's the cultural phenomenon bit which is incredibly surprising and amazing to me. You know, it would have been lovely if the show was just a hit and that it had viewers, but it's the way it's sort of in a kind of, I guess, Star Wars, Star Trek, that kind of thing,
sure,
pop culture type way is sort of seeped into everyday lives in a strange sort of way that I find fascinating, and the way that it's been said before, but not only a certain demographic has embraced the show, but the wider, it's embraced, a lot of people have embraced it, you know, not just kind of geeks and what have you.
Yeah.
And that's what surprises me about it every day that it's still on.
Well, I think, you know, there was a sort of old idea in entertainment that, you know, if a show had dragons on it, it was probably for nerds, and that's probably, you know, but when the story, like, you know, like when you really get caught up in the characters of the story, it almost doesn't even really matter if they're dragons or dolphins or if there are no animal, like, it's just, it's a story.
We haven't had dolphins. I'll suggest it to the writers. See if we can get
snow
it.
No dolphins.
No dolphins.
Not in the book. But come on.
Yeah, I'll talk to George maybe in the next.
Would you
book.
Ask George?
Just yeah, to, I will. I'm speaking to him soon.
You know, George has been on the podcast before, and I think what we do learn about George is that he loves it when people come up and go, you know what you should do, George, and then just follow it up with a bunch of suggestions. I think that is, I think that would
Does
really
he genuinely
make
love that.
No, yeah.
No, I mean, like, if you're, you know, if you're a creator of anything, you know, people always kind of have their own ideas of what you, oh, you know what you should do.
And like, yeah.
I always tell people, like, well, no, you should do that. You could go make a thing. Why do I have to make that thing? If you want snow dolphins, go write about fucking snow dolphins.
It's the way he's pursued by certain fans that I don't understand. It's that I believe he gets seriously insulting letters through from people saying, finish it, finish it.
That's passion.
And it's passion. But I'm always like, you wouldn't have it if he wasn't there. You know, it's that kind of strange pursuit of it that I
Well, we are, you know, as much as I am, I'm as much a consumer as anyone else of anything. And so I do understand when you find something, and you must have stuff that you're a rabid fan of too, but when you find something that just sort of fills that little gully in your soul a little bit,
yeah,
that you just, you start to personalize it and you want more of it, and then you want it in the way that you need it, you know? So it's sort of like, I think we kind of have unhealthy relationships to our entertainment now.
Yes. Yeah. I guess, but it's, I've been a rabid fan of things before, but I have to detach, because I get that, but I have to detach myself. I remember I watched it when I was watching Sopranos. I got ill, and it had already all come out, and I had all the box sets. And I found myself watching it non-stop, you know, and I had the liberty of time on my side. And at one point, I was halfway through season four, I think, and I got out of bed where I was watching it, and went to the fridge, and I opened the fridge like Tony Soprano did, and I was looking for things in the fridge, and I was eating like him. And it's that sort of investment that I'd spent so much time watching this character that, not intentionally at all, I was acting like him, which was very strange.
So that's why, now I want to see Game of Thrones. You're like, well, these fucking White Walkers over here. Yeah. Are you fucking serious?
Yeah. I'll bring in a bit of Soprano.
You could just drop in a little bit of that. Because I know Pompeii is coming out in a couple of days, and you know, that just is like another sort of epic ba-boom, you know, like, do you ever think like, oh, maybe I should just do like a romantic comedy, or like a, you know, like where there are not
on a beach in Hawaii,
just on a beach, or it all takes place in an apartment and it's a Bridget Jones style misunderstanding. Like, do you ever think like, I just want to shoot something that's simple, that's not like on such a massive scale?
Maybe one day, but I feel like Thrones came along, and then I really enjoyed that genre. I really enjoyed what I was doing, and that led to other things in a similar category, and Pompeii included. And I had no real desire at the time, recently, to do that Manhattan apartment slightly comedic role. And it's only now, after I feel like I've filled my quota a bit now with that certain type of genre, that I'm looking for other stuff. But no, I'm not looking for the quirky rom-com yet.
Okay, no.
That's still to come.
And because you're still young, and you have adventure hair. Like, your hair is... like, if you were in one of those rom-coms, I feel like Bridget Jones would be like, you should be on a dragon. Like, it's like your hair looks like you should be in an adventure movie.
Yeah, and that's all thanks to Thrones. and it can't change just yet. But it does... You get a certain image because of something, and then that, you know, if I was going to do something contemporary, I'd be the stoner guy or something, right?
You think so?
Well, yeah, but I mean, what I'm trying to find now is things that fit in to, and actually, one of the projects I'm about to do, I'm playing a spy in modern day London, and I can still have this hair, and actually, it mixes up the, you know, whatever the kind of the assumption is, in a way, what a spy should look like. I quite like playing with the idea that, no, well, he's not going to look like that. He's going to look like me.
Do you have what's your shooting schedule for Thrones? Like, how much of your year does that take up?
Pretty much 6 months.
Oh, 6 months?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not bad, actually.
But it's on and off within that 6 months, so it's quite sporadic. So this season that we've just done, I was doing a lot over those 6 months. It's the most I've ever done, so I was in for quite a bit of it. But generally, the last three seasons, it's, you know, you're 2 weeks here, a week off, back for another week, back for 2 days, and you're back and forth from London, so it's quite free.
Well, that's nice.
Which is nice, yeah.
Yeah. Do you take time off? Do you like? Do you?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I quite like, I've travelled around Ireland a bit. I don't like just going back to London. I like, you know, if I'm in a place and I've been flown to that place, I like to see as much as I can or try and take adventures.
What's the bit? You know, I've been all over England and I've been all over Scotland, and then I'm ashamed to say that I've not been to Ireland. So what, where should I go? Should I hit Belfast? Where should I go first?
Donegal. Okay. I went to Donegal recently. It's on the west northwest coast of Ireland, and it is just, it's an astoundingly beautiful place and a great Guinness and just, you know, the whole, I mean, that's where I'd say I'd go. But I mean, I've yet to go to Dublin. I've spent a lot of time in Belfast. I haven't been to Dublin yet.
Yeah.
I hear that's fun.
Have you been around America a lot or just kind of coastal?
I've been around America a bit. I've mainly on work. So I've been to San Fran, I've been to Philly, I've been to Washington, I've been to Seattle, I've been to... But one of the problems with acting sometimes is you're flown into these places for a day and you see a Four Seasons and that's it. So I've seen a lot of Four Seasons hotels around North America, but it's important. I like taking trips just as to travel, just to see places. So while I've been here, I went out to Joshua Tree. I wanted to go and go up to Big Sur, but I didn't have time. So I try and take time out to do that rather than just seeing cities.
Yeah, Big Sur is nice. I mean, there's not much. I mean, I've been to Big Sur a handful of times, and you just kind of you get out and look at it and go, I'm supposed to do something. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Other than, I guess, appreciate these trees and the coastline, you know.
Just scuffle about amongst the trees.
Did you drive up the one? You haven't driven up the one yet.
What's the one?
The one is the PCH. Like, it's
oh,
the
yeah,
coastal.
Oh, yeah, I've driven up the PCH, yeah. Yeah.
It kind of scares me a little bit. Like, but you're used to...
The expanse of the water and the space.
I have a weird, like, being on... And this is, like, most of what you shot on Thrones last season. But just being on cliffs... And just sort of like driving on cliffs. Even if I'm on the inside of the mountain, I still feel like, what if I just veer the car off on the thing? Like,
it's that fear of jumping, isn't it?
It is the fear of jumping.
It's the fear. It's not the fear of the height. It's the fear of jumping.
Yes, what if
I have exactly the same
really?
Thing. Yeah, yeah.
What if I can't stop myself? What if I just jump?
I'm that close. I could just jump.
You could
I
just,
could.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same next to train tracks and things.
What is that? That is sort of a, I don't know. Is that a mortality thing or is it a... Or is it you kind of realizing, like, life is very fragile? Like, I could just jump on that thing and that would be it.
I think it's that. I think it's like when you're on stage and you in the middle of a play and sometimes your head goes, and it's a children's play, and sometimes your head just goes, I could just say fuck right now. Really loudly. I could do, it's the same thing. It's your brain. I find it very interesting. It's your brain playing little tricks with you.
Yeah, I have a friend of mine who is a comic went to... we had another friend who was on SNL, and during the musical performance, I don't remember who the band was, but he was like, I could not get the thought out of my head, like, I could just run up and punch that guy in the balls real fast. Like, I could just do it. And then, of course, I would get dragged away.
Yeah.
But for a split second on live television, I would punch this guy in the balls.
Yeah.
I don't remember who it was. I really don't remember who it was. But that you...
Oh, don't do this. I've got to do live TV later. And now you're putting all sorts of really bad things in my head. You're putting really bad things in my head, Chris.
It's almost like...
You're going to be watching something later, and I'm just going to run up and punch the host in the balls.
Can Harry just punch Conan O'Brien in the balls? I mean, Conan's very tall, so you like they're easy to hit. You can totally hit him.
Yeah.
I don't know what that mechanism of the brain is.
Yeah, it's I find it endlessly interesting. I don't know. But yeah, I don't like being next to cliffs for the same exact reason.
Have you ever found yourself in a situation where you started to do something really crazy and be like, wait, what am I doing?
I stopped myself. I have done that before. I'm trying to. I stopped myself before doing. I won't say what it is.
was it evil?
Probably. Yeah. Yeah.
See, you got a nice smile, but inside, is there a black heart beating in your chest, Kit Harington?
Yeah, I think so.
The casual nature with which you said that makes me think that it is a dark evil.
Yeah.
What did you study in school when you were growing up?
When I was growing up, I was very, very interested in English literature, and I was very, very interested in photography, and I was interested in history and drama. And it was those... I actually wanted to be sort of go into journalism. I thought that was a kind of interesting place to go into and be a war correspondent or something. And in fact, it was more the performance of that I was enjoying. So it was the drama that I ended up doing. And I was just not good enough at photography to do it. I took terrible photos. Still take terrible photos.
No, I'm sure you have a smartphone. Everyone takes great photos now. You just fucking slap a filter on there.
I got a Polaroid recently.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the little Instagram. Yeah.
And that's the theory behind that is I'm technologically disabled. I can't do anything with my computer. I haven't uploaded my iPhone since I got it.
You should really back that shit up.
2 years ago.
You don't want to lose all this.
I don't know how every time I plug it in, it says you will lose all your music if you update it now. So I go, well, I'm not going to update it then. Someone needs to help me with this. But anyway, I got that Polaroid because I found that I was taking lots of photos and they weren't meaning anything to me. But with a Polaroid, you've got 10 shots. Each shot is $1. And you don't want to waste it all. So you take it, and it's the memory that you remember now because of that little Polaroid.
Oh, that's a really interesting idea.
I think it's great. I'm loving having this Polaroid.
And not only that, but because the interface is so simplistic, you can't cheat the composition of those pictures in any way. So not it really does have to... Oh, yeah. I never thought about that before because my phone has, I think, about 11,500 pictures.
Bloody
on it.
Hell.
Yeah, my camera roll is 11,972 pictures.
Wow.
And I feel like I'm logging all of these things for some reason that I don't know what that is. Yeah. I never go through all these pictures. So what is it that I feel like I'm documenting?
Well, exactly. And they start becoming sort of meaningless. And I think it's great having a phone on you all the time and everyone's got a camera and they're very good quality now. But I think if you compose something and you take a shot, like I was in Joshua Tree and took a shot of something, and I now remember the moment, the event, more because of me taking only that many photos with this Polaroid.
See, that's a really nice artistic way to look at it. I think I'm just a hoarder, and I would rather be able to I wouldn't be able to carry around 11,900 Polaroids everywhere. Yeah. So for me, it's just like, I think it's just like owning things in the world. I own that now. Well, now I own that. I own that thing. You know, it's just I'm collecting something, but I don't know what the ultimate end game is.
Yeah, well, it's finding an end game for me. That's the thing. I want a book, a palpable thing that I can look through and I can write next to it, this was here, this was then. That's the theory behind it.
Do you know what you're doing then? That's journalism. You're going back.
You're reverting,
and then at some point in your life or career, you're going to go, you know what? I have enough pictures to make a book, and here are some experiences that are uniquely Kit Harington experiences.
Exactly, and I think that I've got into the acting world, and I think how horrible it is. So why don't I go back to journalism and photography?
Well, it's nice, particularly for, you know, I mean, a lot of actors are just sort of like, oh, we just shoot in LA, or, you know, I never really travel to shoot anything. But you are someone who gets sent all over the world to shoot stuff. So you really have an interesting perspective and access to areas and places that most people probably wouldn't have.
And stories from those places.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing to collect because, you know, I was shooting Pompeii in Toronto, and now I know a lot about Toronto, and I feel I know a lot about the Canadians, and I love the place, and someone mentions Toronto in conversation, and I come up with a few stories about Toronto, and then it's a wonderful thing to be able to do.
What's your favorite thing about Toronto?
Favorite thing about Toronto? The ice hockey was pretty good.
Oh, yeah, you like that?
I got really into the ice hockey. It was it's the closest thing we have to blood sport, and I'm a big fan of that.
It used to be so much worse too. Yeah. They've toned it down.
They have, I know.
They used to like not wear helmets and you could just knock a guy's grill down his fucking throat. Now it's like and they were fine with that.
I'd never seen it before, and I went to see, and I was doing a Gladiator movie, and so I went to see a an ice hockey match, and it was a wonderful kind of sort of juxtaposition in a way that it was very close to a gladiator ring. They dropped their gloves, and I couldn't believe it. They were allowed to go at each other.
Yeah, everyone's like, that's fine.
And they all jump up, and their blood gets high, and it's, I think, yeah.
It is actually one of the sports that I enjoy going to see. I can't really watch on television, but when you see it live, like when you're there, it really is. Like, first of all, they're essentially wearing these exoskeletons, and they have to whip back and forth at light speed. Like, the athleticism is pretty astounding.
It's insane. I have a huge amount of respect for ice hockey players, and now having gone and see. And you're right. I don't like watching football matches, soccer matches, live, because I feel like I could be watching it at home on a couch with a TV, and I get to see close up and replays. I mean, that makes more sense to me. With ice hockey, there is something about it, watching it live, that it's incredibly exciting.
Yeah, you really. I know. Watching it, I don't think I've ever been to a soccer match, but I'm sure, you know, particularly back where you're from, it's just like you're in a giant stadium.
Yeah.
And you're way, 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 way far away, and you just kind of just see this little ping pong ball.
Yeah.
Sort of like, boop. Oh, I think it's over there. I don't know. Where are those guys? I don't know. I'm not paying attention.
Is probably what you do.
Yeah.
You go to watch the sport.
Well, it is. I mean, like, that, you know, that part I can certainly appreciate about it is this sort of any place where people can become communal.
Yeah.
You know, and really, like, come together for something, I guess, is good for humanity until they start murdering the shit out of each other. But until that happens, I mean, I appreciate that on some level, but crowds freak me out now.
Yeah, they really. Again, I'm with you on that one. I think it's interesting because it's tribal. I read an interesting piece in the paper the other day about how it's not so much about the football; it's wanting to belong to a tribe, and it's something a very basic instinct in all of us that if we follow music, or we follow Game of Thrones, or we follow, then we are part of a tribe, and we are a collective, and we belong to something. And I think it's very much that with football.
Yeah, and I think that. I think the kind of thing that bums me out about it is, you know, especially with the explosion of geek culture and pop culture, is that there is a lot of tribalism that, unfortunately, you know, the internet perpetuates, or at least it provides the platform to perpetuate this tribalism of a. Because I like to be very inclusive and make everyone feel like, hey, whatever you like is cool. I don't get your thing, but that's not, you know, it's totally cool. You know that. But there's so much like, fuck you, you like the, you know, it's basically just geek hooliganism, you know, except instead of beating the shit out of each other, it's just all caps swears in a comment thread, you know, and I kind of wonder if that's, I don't know if that's good.
I think it's a really, really poisonous element of our social media invasion is the anonymity at which people can sit somewhere and insult people.
Sure.
And I find it cowardly and horrible. I really, really hate it. And I love discussion, like you. I love discussion on in any form around a table and on the internet. It's great. But it's when you can sit there and be anonymous and throw really quite horrible insults at people. I find it really, really strange.
No, granted, it's not being in a pub in Belfast and having someone smash a Guinness pint against your face, but it still is, you know, there's a certain amount of... I just wish people would start with trying to understand first.
Like, yes.
Okay, what is your thing? I don't understand that. Teach me that thing. This is why I asked you like what you like about soccer, because I feel like maybe there's something I'm missing. Maybe there's something that I can understand about it that would enhance my life in some way.
Oh, I think people actually have quite a lot of fun insulting each other. I don't think they sit there and go, ooh, that hurt. They just go, right, what can I say back? But it's when those people decide to insult public figures or people who are, say, an Olympian at the Sochi Olympics.
Sure.
Or Sochi, or however you say it, or an actor or a musician or politician, when they decide to start insulting them on that level and that there is no response, it can be a really, really horrible thing.
So what are your tribes besides Manchester United? Like, what other tribes would you consider yourself a part of?
I did think about this the other day, and I'm worried that I'm just part of the actor tribe, and that really depresses me. I need another tribe. I've been thinking long and hard about what other tribe I could join.
Yeah.
I consider myself a Manchester United fan, but I think a lot of Man United fans would take issue if I said that I was a proper Man United fan. I don't know. I want to get a hobby, and I would consider myself a Londoner,
mm-hmm.
and that's my tribe. Being a Londoner and being, you know, British, and that would be my tribe, I think, without sounding too patriotic and xenophobic.
No, listen, I think if I, when I die, if there's a thing that says, Doctor Who style, we're going to pop you back into any point in time and any culture you want, I honestly feel like I would want to go back to... I would go to London in like the early to mid 60s.
Yeah, I was going to say the same
thing.
Just
feels 60s. Like a really cool time, like when England was really sort of like exploding with pop culture and music and art, and you know, and everyone was just
a lot of them didn't make it through, but but the ones that did always have that glint of like that was a good time in their eyes when they think about the 60s.
Yeah.
I'd agree. I'd go back there as well, I think. I think that my friend's mum told me recently that she was at a party in the 60s, and this quite wild-haired guy, this mad guy, came down the stairs, took one look at her, snogged her, and walked off. And it was Jimi Hendrix. I was like, come on, that. Now that is a claim to fame.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
That's a really good story. Now I feel like there would be a... harassment lawsuit. it wouldn't go
someone
over
someone from One Direction snogged him.
Not Harry Styles. But I don't know, there was something about and we had it a bit in this country too, of just sort of coming out of a very that rigid kind of post-war reconstruction era of like we have to rebuild and everyone's work and you keep your head down and you fit into society and then the children of those people we're like, hey, we don't have to worry about, you know, all the stuff you worried about. So we got all this free time. Let's take drugs and fuck each other in the streets. Like,
yeah, and female liberation. And it was a very fascinating time for lots
the explosion of rock and you know. Now I think about it a lot because I don't know how to define, and maybe we won't be able to do this for another decade, but I don't know how to define what it is that we're in now. I don't know what this era is.
Yeah, I think this era is it's so linked to social media, to technology, to because it burst onto the scene about what 7 years ago. I remember a time when I didn't have a mobile phone.
Sure.
I had to meet someone at McDonald's at exactly that time, otherwise you'd lost them forever.
Forever. You never saw those people again.
Yeah, and
I
now
lost another one.
And now I see kids walking around. And I said to someone the other day, oh, you've got to flick through. And instead of, you know, with a book, you know, you used to go like that. I went like that, as in an iPad. I think I don't know where it's going to go. And I think that's very fascinating. But I think when people look back at this time, it will be dominated by the G of Google, by that Apple symbol there, by it'll be those things. And by, you know, I think that'll be it.
Well, I think that we're probably going to enter an era of, I mean, the idea of the way that we interface with machines is still kind of archaic in terms of technology. I mean, like, we interface with them pretty much the same way that we did. The machines force us to interface with them as if we were machines.
Yeah.
So you're like this, you're typing, or even if you're swiping, or even if you're on your phone, you still have this. So how do they, you know, when technology sort of weaves more organically into our daily use, you know, is it less obtrusive because it's not, you know, we don't have these things and this, if it's just like, you know, if just the Google Glass, or if it's contacts that, you know, just...
It's going to be people, now we know when people are always find it funny looking into a car and someone's talking to themselves.
Yeah.
And you realize they're talking, but it'll be that. It'll be a whole load of mental monkeys walking down the street talking to themselves. Well, and then you'll say something, you have things in your ear and you'll say, play Lord, and it'll play
right
and stop, and then you can talk. It's scary, but I hope it goes in the right way. I hope we use it in the right way.
I think our attentions are getting, I think our brains are going to start to evolve to be able to multitask, so you won't have to stop playing the classic Lord song to have a conversation with someone.
That freaks me out.
Because one side of your brain will just be absorbing that song, and then the other side will just be having the conversation.
You will see me jump off that cliff. You will see that if we get to that. Yeah,
I mean, it's England didn't really have the. I mean, in America, you know, when I was growing up in the early 80s, we had this explosion of media. You know, mm-hmm. it's like cable television just mm-hmm. exploded here, and it wasn't really the same for you guys growing up, right? I mean, you still had your base. Four channels or five channels, but there's like cable and satellite now, but it didn't. I wonder why it didn't catch on as quickly in London as here.
See, I wouldn't profess to know a huge amount about that. I just remember being very, very excited when we heard there was going to be a Channel 5, and we waited. I remember being incredibly excited, and we waited, and for months on end, there was this one picture that said Channel 5 coming soon, and we'd watch it, like, oh, it could start any minute. And they did very clever publicity about, you know, we don't know when it's going to start, and you see, you'd watch it, it could start any second. And then it came, and it was absolutely terrible. Sorry, Channel 5, I'm sorry. It's almost wonderful now.
But at the time...
At the time, it was pretty dire.
I just think that's funny to watch just a still image of a number 5, and then not knowing, is this it? Is this Channel 5? Is it literal? It's just the number 5.
It's just that.
We're watching it, so it's working.
Yeah, I don't know. I think now we definitely do have a similar... I'm a huge, huge fan of the BBC and in our country. Taxpayers, we pay for the BBC, and it's supposed to be completely politically unbiased.
Yeah,
that I think is a great thing. It's not relying on advertisement. It's if you can have one channel like that, which is Radio 4. If you ever want to listen to a really good radio station, BBC Radio 4 is one of the most wonderful things that we have in the UK because it's so eclectic. One minute you'd be listening to Gardener's World, and the next minute it's a documentary by Jarvis Cocker on the rise of Britpop. It's brilliant. It's brilliant like that. So I don't know how I got onto that, but I think the BBC is...
Well, just talking about having this outlet that isn't ruled by advertisers.
Yeah.
I mean, because we, you know, all the TV stuff I work on is obviously... I work in cable, and cable is not governed by the FCC, mm-hmm. which governs the airwaves.
Yeah.
Because cable is a different delivery system, technically, so... but you know, we still have things we can and can't say because of sponsors, and so it's all ruled. It's mm-hmm. all ruled by that. But I just don't. You know, I just think America's too big to work that way. I mean, it's just too fucking. There's just too many people that would be like, "Well, that's not what I want. And that's not what I want." Like we're just, and I think we as Americans have also been raised to feel like I deserve the exact thing I want, exactly the way that I want it, whenever I want it, and however I want it. You know?
Yeah, it's wonderful in its own way. It's just different. I mean, but if I could plug HBO here, I think that's a wonderful, that's a great, what's the word? A great... I can't remember the word. A great shape for a TV company to work in because we get shows like Game of Thrones with a huge amounts of nudity and violence and it's because it's paid for by the customers and it doesn't rely on advertising, which is very...
Although I feel like the sexy part of Game of Thrones they've ebbed that in the last season, which, you know, I was fine with that. I remember the first season of Game of Thrones, and I'd be like, why are there... There's tits in the background, and I'm a guy. I think they're great, but I was just like, I don't know. That's sort of my friends, the Sklar brothers, are pair of comedians. And the first season they called Game of Thrones "Tits with a Chance of Dragons."
Tits with a Chance of Dragons. Yes, that is a good way of putting it.
But I do like that. You know, I do like that. It is there. That's, you know, there's so much about the story now, and obviously, and your character had some sexy times.
Uh-huh.
In a hot spring.
Yeah, he got laid.
He did. That is there.
We didn't see it, but I think I'm always wondering: did he get laid?
Did he see it?
Did he just do that thing and then he didn't actually get laid?
Yeah.
He could still be a virgin.
And then she was like, "I'm tired." What?
Yeah.
No, but what, like a second ago.
Yeah.
That to me, I would be one of the, maybe you're not, I would be so terrified to shoot like a love scene where you're exposed with another person and it's, it has to seem real, but you got to fake it, but they don't want them to feel it. Like, how do you arrive at a level of trust with another performer where you're like, I'm going to do things to you and it's pretend, but it's okay.
Well, it's acting and you know the scene's coming up and hopefully you've got a good dialogue with that other actor and you kind of laugh at it, really. It's all about that. And it's not fun to watch with your mother afterwards. I watched that episode with my parents.
Oh,
I don't know why I chose to do that.
No.
And my mum said, it came along, my mum was, I'm just going to get a cup of tea. Does anyone...
No, you're going to miss this part.
It's like everyone busied themselves with things. To tell a story right in this, especially with this show, you, I believe, have to do scenes like that. And I was kind of, I got lucky. I mean, I didn't really have to get that naked.
Right.
Which was strange to me, you know, but I think you have to sign a nudity clause at the start and you have to just get on and do it. And it is weird doing it. You sort of like doing a scene like that with someone you know very well, with another actress. It can be strange.
Well, I think it really, you just have to find where the trust lines are and, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's a situation that lends itself to abject creepery, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't be winking at someone in between takes. You know, like, huh?
Yeah.
You know, like, I would be so apologetic. Like, I'm so sorry we're supposed to do this.
I don't see what the big fuss is about nudity. I think we're all still too Victorian about it. It's if you're a grown adult, you've all seen naked bodies. What's, you know, and there's far too much pressure on poor young women to look a certain way.
Absolutely.
I really believe that. And I think it gives actresses a huge complex when they have to do scenes like that. And it's much easier for us guys. But
I've said many times before, though, that the male penis looks like a rotten root vegetable and deserves to be covered up.
No one wants to see it.
It's not an attractive thing to have.
No.
Not attractive at all. At least nature could have given it some color. Like, look, there's cranberry. You know, like, I don't know,
again,
something.
Chris, you can still do that.
Wait, what? Oh, my God. I don't even have one. I wouldn't even get a tattoo on my arm, much less, like, this region. There's no chance that's going to happen.
All right.
But with Pompeii, what was the... I haven't seen Pompeii yet, mm-hmm. but what's the story? I mean, obviously, I assume it's the story of Pompeii, but is it leading up to the moments before, or what can you talk about?
Yeah, what I really liked about the premise, about the idea, was that we have these cocoon bodies, these shells that were filled in with concrete, and we can see what people were doing in their last moments of their life. And so the film is bookended with looking at these sort of... There's very famous ones of a pregnant woman clutching her belly, a man covering his face, someone praying, two people kissing. It's fascinating to think how these people a millennia ago might have been, what they might have done on the last days before it went off. And I thought that was a really interesting thing to play with. So we follow a gladiator who's taken from Britannia, who's me, who's taken over to Pompeii and is forced to fight for his life. His whole family's been killed. And we follow a noble woman, a young noble lady who is, you know, is in Pompeii. And they sort of meet each other, encounter each other. And there's a huge class divide. And then the volcano goes off, which completely... evens the playing field for both of them, which again was a nice little story to tell. And on top of it, it's a movie that, you know, we all know or think we know of the story about Pompeii and how the volcano went off, but it's never been screened because you didn't have the CGI or 3D technology to do it. And actually, it's pretty accurate, we think, to what happened on the day, as far as we know. And so you get to see what a massive volcanic explosion would look like, which I think is very exciting.
It is. I always get, if I think about it too much, it sort of twists my brains into pretzel shapes of just of, you know, one moment and then it's everything just Yeah. Then they're just frozen there.
Yeah.
Forever.
Well, it was an entire day. I did my fact checking after the movie finished. All through the movie, I was going, this went on for an entire day? Like, are you sure? Because I thought everyone died in seconds. And they went, no, it did. And it was a whole sequence of events. People died over the period of a day, and then a big pyroclastic flow, as it's called, which is hot ash, came in and covered everything. So it was a horrific event and a long process. And some people did escape. It didn't kill everyone. Yeah. So it's I enjoyed watching it when it was finished, because you could really sort of invest in the explosion and the kind of, yeah, I loved it.
Were you a history guy?
Yeah, I loved it. I did history at A level. That was another thing that I was interested in.
Oh, very fancy.
Not ancient Roman history, but I studied. It was something ultimately hugely boring. It was like the building of the canals in middle of the 17th century in England. So maybe that put me off somewhat.
I've always as an American, being able to go over and seeing like really, really, really old things, uh-huh. You guys are all used to that shit, but for us, we're just like, they're hundreds of years old, you know, like, and we have parts of our country, but our part of the country is very young. I mean, we're in, mm-hmm. one of the youngest parts of the United States here.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like travel is important. Connecting with history is important. I mean, like, you know, and I think it's one of the reasons that we get spoiled of having a country that's so vast, is that we sort of feel like, well, we got everything here. What do we need to go see anything else for? What else do we need? You know, but to really go and sort of see, like, sort of like this brick wall, like sedimentary cultures, where it's like, this was a culture and then not a culture anymore. And then this built on top of this, and then this built on top of this, and this built on top of this.
And at the very heart of it, very little changes amongst humans. You know, we develop technology and we develop an industrial revolution. But what I like about Pompeii is that the story of two people meeting and falling in love is timeless. So, I get why Americans don't, or there's, you know, some horrible statistic about how, you know, how many Americans don't own a passport. But I get that, because you come to your country and there's every different state has a different feeling or vibe, and I get why some people wouldn't leave. I urge people to go and see Pompeii and go and come to London, but I get the reasons behind it.
Does it? If you ever get a chance, like just taking a week or two to just drive across America, it really is a beautiful. I mean, you'll see more fucking corn than you've ever seen in your entire life. But it really is, you know, especially if you're used to growing up in a city where everything's packed together, just sort of feeling like there's nothing for miles and miles. I mean, you probably get that in Ireland, but it really is. America really is a pretty country.
Yeah. Well, from what I've seen, it very much is. I quite like to do the Midwest. I quite like to drive across. But I don't know. I think I'd go insane driving for all that time. I don't
you
know.
Do,
maybe
you do go a little crazy.
So much corn.
Well, you start... You know, my girlfriend and I did a couple years ago, and you know, and we were sort of driving in like 400 to 500 mile increments.
Uh-huh.
And you start the day at like 11, you know, like lazy. Oh, it's like 11, we'll start driving. And then that's it.
Yeah, you're just all like, excited at the top. Yeah. And then that's it.
Now what do we do? Like, it's funny that in the middle of the widest space that you've ever been in, you could feel completely imprisoned.
Yeah. Like, what are we gonna do? Massively. Is it agoraphobic? Agoraphobic.
Agoraphobic, like going outside?
Yeah. Going outside, going into massively big spaces, I find very disconcerting.
Really?
Yeah.
I used to have that, but over large bodies of water.
Yeah, or swimming in large
bodies. Oh, yes.
The fear of that huge... It's vertigo, that massive amount of space underneath you, and yet you're floating.
When I'm watching... Like, if I watch, like, Discovery Channel, and then, like, someone's swimming, and then, like, a whale shark goes underneath them, I just start to get, like...
I have a huge fear of sunken ships. If I was to dive, I would hate to go near a sunken ship.
Oh, really?
I don't know what. I don't know what that's about.
I don't know. I think it's... Is that a death thing, or is it I don't know what that is.
It's large submerged objects.
I think part
where do we pick up these fears? Where does it come from?
You know, the truth of the matter is that it was probably something that happened to you when you were a baby, like something you saw an image of something and it just imprinted and your wiring just went and then
I don't like that.
And then,
yeah.
But I totally understand that because it's that feeling of insignificance, I think, where you're like, well, here's a, you know, we think our bodies are it. We're the top of the food chain and we're the, but then when you realize like, oh no, we're not. We're just these tiny little specks of dandruff that at any moment, you know,
dandruff,
could just get like brushed off the planet. Like that's where I totally feel that stuff
too.
If I
get reincarnated and come back as dandruff, I'm going to be really pissed.
We might be, man. Who knows if we're not just cosmic dandruff here on the scalp of the universe.
Yeah.
Well, now there's, you know, like now there are people working on the theory that the universe as we know it is essentially a mathematical simulation.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's the new one.
That's the new one right now. That mathematically, it's like, you know, we are essentially like the equivalent of a computer simulation happening.
I don't buy into that.
No.
I don't buy into that one. But then I think at the very end of the day, if you really look at it all, it doesn't make sense anyway. So why not? That's just a just as good a theory as whatever I could come up with.
We might be at the bottom of a pirate ship. That's going to be really fucked up if you actually get cast in a movie where you have
to philosophize like this.
No. Where you have to like.
Okay. I wouldn't take it. I genuinely wouldn't take it.
You wouldn't take it like a pirate ship.
No. Pirates of the Caribbean 6, the submerged depths or something.
So you're okay with you're okay with it's like floating in a working ship, but if it's wreckage, then that's not so good.
Titanic, the movie, you know when they swim the thing down and the submarine, they look, that freaks me out more than Saw 3 or whatever. That really, really kind of scares me.
That one I totally understand. Yeah. That one I totally understand because it's oh man. There was a photo series online, and there was an abandoned school.
Yeah.
And someone had gone in and basically just superimposed, I'll send you the link if you want it, but it superimposed photographs in the space that was spaces that were now completely dilapidated, but just like one little snapshot in the middle where they lined up the room.
Right.
And it was like, that's when, just school pictures of students, you know, like having debate class or in the science lab. So you just see like this little 4 or 5 square inches of like students in a science lab, but all the outer edges are essentially just this completely dilapidated, run down, fucked up. And I had such a profound sadness looking at it because it just felt like this is what happens. Here is a peanut of life nestled in with all this decay, and at first I thought, oh, this is really cool, and then each one there were like 21 pictures, and I was just like, I just got sadder and sadder, and you know, like it totally freaked me out.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing, but submerged ships.
Where the school is a treasure boat, which is no. Have you ever been on a cruise before?
God, no. No offense to people who like cruises, but I can't think of anything worse than being trapped on a ship.
I didn't think it would be good, but it actually is not bad.
Oh, you went on one?
Yeah, I've been on a couple. Yeah. I had to go on for work. And I was resistant to the idea, but I had to go for work. And it, you know, they're so fucking massive that it's like being in a mall with a motel attached to it. Right. And then every once in a while you look out and you go, oh, yeah, there's nothing around. It's just water. And then I was okay.
It's a floating town.
It's a floating town. Like, they're so big now. I don't think I'd be able to be on like a little sailboat and then just take off into the ocean. I think that would be too overwhelming.
Yeah, no, I couldn't do that either. I like the idea behind cruises, but if I get to a place and I've got a day there, I'd want to stay longer.
Yeah,
I think that's my problem with them as well.
What types of stuff do you like to do when you go to an area?
I like to travel on my own generally. I like to because I find you. Well, I used to when I can't remember the last time I went traveling, but. I quite like that you meet people along the way, in a way that you wouldn't meet if you were with people. You're forced to interact with travelers around you.
Yeah.
I think my next place I'd go is probably South America.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. end up in Brazil for this sort of summer. I haven't got time, but I would love
Costa Rica's pretty nice if you ever get a chance.
Oh, yeah, I hear. No, I got to go to Costa Rica.
Yeah. But there's a lot of places in Europe that I still haven't been. And there's a lot of... I still haven't been to Japan. I haven't been to Iceland.
Go to Iceland. And go and just sort of enjoy Reykjavik and enjoy the country because it's an amazing, amazing place.
Is it... Should I stay in Reykjavik or should I go start driving and just get into
please promise me you won't just start driving.
Okay.
No, get a guide, otherwise you can get lost. But you get a kind of... we were lucky, we were thrown, so we were we were shown it through, you know, with a big film company with us. But I think get a guide and go around and sort of drink with the locals and, you know, they're brilliant. It's the people that are incredible in Iceland as well.
Yeah.
They're absolutely, you know, completely insane, and I love them for it.
Are you able to just walk up and start talking to people? Are you extroverted?
They will walk up and talk to you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I can walk up and start talking to people. It sometimes goes better than other times, but yeah. It's weird doing that now, though, that there's some sort of worldwide recognition of the show.
Sure.
And if you go up and talk to people now and they recognize you from the show, they're like, why are you coming up and talking to me? Why has Jon Snow just decided to come up and have a chat?
See, you could totally have the worst, like, dad joke pickup lines. Looks like Snow's here. Jon Snow, hi. Nice to meet you, Game of Thrones. There's so many.
My friend dared me to do that, and I couldn't do it. He said, "Go, all right," because we were playing Dares, and I said, "All right, you've got to go and you've got to go dance with that girl, like really badly, but just go and dance with her." And he did it, and then he came back and he said, "It was your turn." And I was like, "Okay," and he went, "You've got to go up to that girl over there, and you've got to say." Hi, I'm Kit Harington. I play Jon Snow on Game of Thrones. It's lovely to meet you. Like, and I just couldn't. I couldn't do it.
There's no way to do it.
I went up and I went, "Hi, I'm sorry, I can't do this," and walked away because it's so cringe. I just couldn't. I couldn't do that.
It's not possible.
No.
No, I know. I'm no good at. I get really like. It's a kind of agoraphobia, but just like in public spaces when there's other people, like I just can't. I just couldn't do it. I've never been good at just walking up and talking to people. I don't know what I think is going to happen.
Try it. Give it a go.
No,
promise
it's my sunken
it.
Treasure ship.
Just try and have some backup support around you that... I mean, I don't think we do it enough nowadays. I think people are, again, getting back into that, but people are so like this that we don't actually go and interact.
Well, my girlfriend is so extroverted. I feel like I've had a negative effect on her because I've sort of... By virtue of how I am, I forced her to introvert a little bit. Right. She'll just be in an elevator with people, and she'll be like, "Oh, that's a really great shirt. Those are great shoes." And I'm like, "Please, just get out."
Yeah, no, you should come to the UK because there's something very strange in this country that if you get into an elevator, people start talking to you. It just does not happen in the UK. If there's an unwritten rule, like the rule in the men's toilet that you don't go and pee in the next urinal next to someone.
That's right.
There's an unwritten rule that if you're in an elevator in England, or a lift as we call them, you just don't, you shut down.
That's the way to do it.
Even if you're like with a friend, you shut down. You just don't talk for the time you're there.
I knew I was more British than American.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it. You just reminded me of a really horrible bathroom experience I had once where I was at a urinal and it was, the bathroom was crowded, so it was the kids' urinal.
Right.
And I already am not, like, there's dudes just right here, and I'm, you know, I'm a little gun-shy about the whole situation, but I'm dealing with it. I'm doing some breathing exercises and letting it happen. And all of a sudden, I hear these little, like, footsteps of these tiny little, like, getting closer. "Daddy, Daddy, he's at my toilet!" And I feel a finger poke, like, into the back of my buttocks. This tiny little hand, and it was just the most awkward because I'm peeing, and there's a child and the father, and other people are looking, and so I'm like, I don't. It's the only time I've ever been able to cut off midstream and then just duck out. I was so stressed out.
I've got a friend called James. One of my best friends called James is the most gun shy person you've ever met. It's the funniest thing. He'll go, "I'm just going to the loo." And he has to wait till everyone else is out of the restroom, the loo, and he'll go in and then as he's just about to pee, you just walk in and he can't go.
How's it going in there?
James Cannon, everybody.
His name's Cannon?
Cannon.
Oh, Cannon.
Yeah.
That'd have been funny if it was Cannon.
It's going to kill me. Yeah.
Now, wherever that guy, people are going to find that guy, and he's never going to be able to go to the bathroom in public again.
He really has a problem with it. He can't pee.
See, this is good, though. This you're giving him therapy. You're trying to counsel him through this so that he
No, we're not. It's just endlessly hilarious.
Well, we're almost at an hour. I mean, actually, yeah, we're right about at an hour. This was the podcast. We did it.
We did it, yeah.
I hope you had a nice time. It was really, you know, we didn't really get a chance to say, Comic-Con is such a mad, well, especially for you, I would imagine. It's such a madhouse, but it's always, you know, I always feel like I have brushes with people. I'm like, oh, I'd like to talk to that guy more. She seems cool, but then there's just never any time at Comic-Con.
People are getting whisked away this way and that way. And yeah, it is a madhouse. I really love it, but you don't get a chance to properly interact with people sometimes.
Are you able to kind of absorb it at all when, you know, as I remember when I introduced you and of the panel, like people shit their pants the most when you came out, like Kit Harington, it's just like 7,000 people flipping out.
Yeah. Well, Thrones is so big there. It's one of the things that I think is quite big at Comic-Con But I find that whole panel thing strange because you're whisked around and you're so busy and you get interviewed here and doing this and doing that. And then the only actual silent time is when you're sat in front of about 5,000 people. And you can go... And your publicist isn't there, so she can't grab you. And like you're just there and it's nice and silent. And yeah.
And then you said... What if I took my penis out?
What if I just showed my ass right now?
What if I just did that right now? What would be stopping me? Now, the next time people see you on a Game of Thrones panel, they will know that's probably where your brain is going.
Yeah, there is a slight risk of it happening.
And judging by the reaction from Hall H, they would probably be fine with it. If that's the way you want to go. Kit, thank you so much for being here. It was a pleasure. Good luck with Pompeii, and good luck with the next season. Have you shot? You've shot, yeah, because they just put the teaser trailer on.
Yeah, yeah, we shot. We finished at the end of last year, so it's coming out...
April, right?
April 6th, I believe. Yeah, it's going to be a big one.
Very excited.
It's going to be a big one.
John was pretty fucked up the last time we saw him.
Yeah, he was, and... I can't say anything.
I know, it's so hard. You literally can't say anything.
It's so action-packed this season. It's so... I think they're going to do really amazing things because they, for a crass way of putting it, they threw so much money at it this year. And everyone really turned up with their performances, I think. So, yeah, it's going to be good.
Excellent. Thanks, man. It's good to see you.
Thanks. Thank you for having me.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist for a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and $55 of free postage. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this. Perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels... A symphony of just three simple ingredients. Popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.